I want you to imagine just for a second walking into this pristine, beautifully decorated model townhome.
Right, like totally perfect.
Exactly. It's the middle of a quiet Friday afternoon. The sunlight is just sort of streaming through those large bay windows, you know, catching the dust motes.
Brand of that classic suburban lighting.
And the staging is just absolutely flawless. Like the throw pillows are perfectly karate chopped, and you've got that scent of fresh paint and new carpet lingering in the hallway.
It's totally engineered to make you feel comfortable.
Right. It's the absolute picture of tranquility.
Right.
But then, you know, as you step further into the living room, you realize something just completely terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
You are standing in the middle of an impossible crime scene.
It's a deeply unsettling juxtaposition, really. I mean, we are so culturally conditioned to associate model homes with, like, fresh beginnings and safety.
Yeah, they're literally selling the dream.
Exactly. They are physical manifestations of aspiration. So to find violence in a space explicitly designed by architects to feel welcoming, it completely shatters your baseline sense of security.
It really feels like a violation of the space itself.
You know? Yeah.
And that shattering is basically the foundation of what we are uncovering today.
It really is.
So for today's deep dive, we are focusing on the chilling 2011 murder of a rising 27-year-old real estate star named Ashley Oakland.
A case that was just a ghost story for so long.
Literally a decade and a half, it haunted the Midwest. But then, you know, in the spring of 2026, this shocking arrest finally cracked the 15-year cold case wide open.
Which was just massive news.
Huge. So we're going to explore how an unsolvable mystery finally found its missing piece. And to guide us through this maze, we're drawing from two really distinct sources.
Right, the new and the analytical.
It's exactly. First, we've got the breaking 2026 news report from KCRG, which details the long-awaited indictment. And second, and this is where it gets really fascinating, we are pulling heavily from a detailed true crime breakdown in a commercial real estate series.
Yeah, The Midnight Ledger.
Yes, The Midnight Ledger. It's authored by Priyanshu Edathakar, or Pri for short.
His perspective is just vital here, honestly, because Pri has this really unique dual authority.
He's not just a writer.
No, not at all. He's a commercial real estate investment advisor and a fellow realtor. So he approaches this with a real boots-on-the-ground methodology.
Yeah, like a real estate detective.
Exactly like that. He actively protects his clients' interests in the Central Ohio market, so he sees what, you know, traditional spreadsheets or even standard police reports might miss.
He really understands the invisible dynamics of the property itself.
Yeah, the physical and psychological environment.
Right. But to really grasp the sheer relief of that 2026 arrest, we have to take you back in time first. We need to look at the initial investigation of 2011.
What Pri chillingly refers to as the sterile grave of Unit 521.
Such a haunting name.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the timeline on April 8th, 2011. Ashley Oakland is hosting an open house at a new development called Stone Creek Villas.
And the timeline is just razor thin.
It really is. At 1330 hours, so 1:30 p.m., she is documented as being alive and active at her makeshift desk.
Right. In broad daylight.
Broad daylight on a Friday. People are out walking dogs, checking mailboxes. It's an active community.
Which makes the next sequence of events so jarring, because at 13.58, a witness nearby hears a distinct thump.
Just a single thump.
Yeah. And just 4 minutes later, at 14.02, a worker enters the model townhome and discovers Ashley's body.
Wow.
She had suffered two gunshot wounds to the chest and neck.
4 minutes. I mean, I just want to pause on that because 4 minutes is nothing.
It's incredibly fast.
It takes 4 minutes just to walk to your car and check your phone. When I read this timeline, my brain instantly went to a classic locked room mystery.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Because the sheer oddity of the scene defies all normal criminal behavior. I mean, usually daytime violent crimes involve chaos, right?
Definitely. You expect a physical manifestation of human panic.
Broken glass, overturned staging furniture, defensive wounds.
Right. Because when adrenaline floods your system during a violent act, your fine motor skills just severely degrade. You make mistakes, you drop things, you leave a chaotic footprint.
But in Unit 521, there was nothing. The scene was absolutely immaculate.
It's so eerie.
Her purse was sitting right nearby, completely untouched. All of her jewelry was still on her. And maybe the most baffling detail of all, there were zero spent shell casings left behind.
Which is just wild for a shooting.
Right. It wasn't a robbery gone wrong. It wasn't a panicked intruder. It was an execution.
And the clinical psychology reflected in that physical space is terrifying. When detectives arrived, they were totally reeling because of how sterile the environment was?
A completely sterile crime scene.
Yeah. In criminal psychology, a sterile environment tells a very dark story. To walk into a model home in broad daylight, execute someone, ensure no shell casings are left, and vanish in a 4-minute window.
It's almost unthinkable.
It requires a chilling level of efficiency.
Well, let's think about those missing shell casings for a second.
Mm.
The killer either used a revolver, which retains its own brass, or they actually took the time in that tiny 4-minute window to bend down and pick up the casings off the carpet.
Which is just staggering to think about.
Right. Both scenarios point to a level of composure that is completely abnormal.
Exactly. It requires either meticulous, cold-blooded planning or a terrifying degree of emotional detachment.
Yeah, they didn't scramble at all.
No, they didn't panic. They simply erased their presence. It is the absolute definition of a sterile crime scene.
Which naturally leads to the most agonizing question for law enforcement. How do you catch a killer who leaves absolutely nothing behind?
You basically have to cast the widest net geometrically possible.
Right. Which brings us to the massive hunt that followed. The scale of the investigation launched by Polk County was entirely unprecedented.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
They conducted over 500 individual interviews.
500? That's a staggering logistical undertaking. They aren't just knocking on neighbors' doors at that point.
No, they are tracing the alibi of every single contractor who ever poured concrete at Stone Creek Villas.
Tracking down everyone who ever signed a guest book at any of Ashley's open houses. Pulling cell tower dumps.
And they gathered a massive reward pool, too. It eventually totaled $150,000.
Which is huge. Usually that kind of money loosens allegiances, right?
Yeah.
An ex-spouse talks or an accomplice gets nervous.
Exactly. But here, the money produced nothing. They vetted every digital lead, every client interaction. They even drained the entire lake looking for a weapon.
And found an empty basin.
Yeah.
The Midnight Ledger introduces a concept here called profiles and shadows, which I think perfectly captures the dread of this phase.
It really does, because initially there was no digital footprint, no forensic signature.
And crucially, zero DNA profile recovered from the scene.
It all ties back to that sterile environment. The killer didn't leave blood or hair or even a piece of torn clothing.
Well, wait, I have to challenge this whole vanishing act premise for a second.
Yeah.
Because how does someone just evaporate in broad daylight in a modern suburban development?
It's the million-dollar question.
Like, Stone Creek Villas isn't some secluded cabin in the woods. Mm. It's a community. There are sight lines, delivery drivers. The idea that a killer just walks out the front door and disappears feels like we're saying a literal ghost did this.
I know. It's incredibly frustrating to wrap your head around.
Doesn't logic dictate it had to be a stalker? Or maybe a disgruntled client she had a hidden falling out with?
Well, you're hitting on the core paradox that paralyzed the whole investigation. Your brain naturally wants to assign a rational, traceable motive.
Right, because things have to make sense.
But this case highlights the almost insurmountable difficulty of solving motiveless crimes. According to the files, Ashley was a universally liked young woman with no clear threats reported.
Just a totally normal, successful person.
Yeah. And when there are no known enemies, traditional policing hits a massive wall. They usually work outward from the victim's inner circle based on motive, financial gain, jealousy, revenge.
And if you eliminate money, jealousy, and revenge, you're literally staring at a blank whiteboard.
Exactly. You are looking for a specific grain of sand when you don't even know if you're standing on a beach or in a desert.
That is such a good way to put it.
The absence of evidence actually became the primary characteristic of this killer.
Wow.
The profile was simply someone who leaves no trace and operates without a clear motive, which gives law enforcement absolutely no leverage.
That void of information is just suffocating. And it didn't just stall justice for Ashley's family. Overnight, the silence of Unit 521 completely shattered the illusion of safety for the entire real estate industry.
It fundamentally altered the day-to-day reality of being an agent.
But before we get into the mechanical changes the industry made, we really need to ground this in the human element. The KCRG report has this interview with Ashley's brother, Josh Oakland, that is just heartbreaking.
Oh, the Panera Bread story? Yeah, that completely recontextualizes the loss.
Right. Josh remembers sitting at a Panera in Ankeny with Ashley for 4 solid hours on April 7th, the exact day before the murder.
Just 24 hours prior.
Yeah. Her career was booming so much that she had just hired him to be her assistant. She needed help with pamphlets, organizing listings, all of that.
They were building a professional future together.
Exactly. He told reporters, "I will never forget that day. the emotional whiplash of going from this hopeful sibling moment to the sterile silence of that crime scene. It's unimaginable.
It really personalizes the tragedy. Case files and statistics just can't convey that kind of loss.
No, they can't.
And you can see how that profound personal loss translated into a national wake-up call. The industry was forced to abruptly reckon with its own safety procedures.
Which led to the buddy system for open houses, right?
Yeah, that and the urgent adoption of GPS-enabled safety apps to track an agent's location in real time.
It totally reminds me of the sweeping changes in aviation safety after a major crash.
Yeah.
You know, the FAA literally rewrites the rulebook.
That's a highly accurate parallel.
Modern safety rituals, refusing to do open houses alone, mapping escape routes, they were born directly from the vulnerability exposed in Unit 521.
And this is where Pry's deep dive in the Midnight Ledger becomes so illuminating. He focuses heavily on the intersection of architecture, isolation, and crime.
Yeah, he explains why open houses are inherently dangerous spaces.
Because the design is practically a trap. Think about it. The entire goal of an open house is to remove barriers to entry.
Right. You want strangers to walk in off the street. You put signs up, leave the door unlocked. He screams, come inside, no questions asked.
It is the architecture of vulnerability. By removing those barriers, agents intentionally create a transient, unregulated space.
That is so true.
Pry points out the psychological isolation built into the daily life of an agent. You're often entirely alone in an empty property, waiting for unvetted individuals to show up.
And the staging creates this false sense of security.
Exactly. It feels like a home to the buyer, but it masks the reality that the agent is isolated in a confined space with a stranger.
It's a chilling realization. The job practically demands that you isolate yourself with anonymous walk-ins.
It really does. And for 15 long years, those safety changes were Ashley's only legacy. The case itself sat freezing cold.
Over a decade of dead ends and a phantom killer.
But her family never surrendered. They kept fighting, keeping her name in the press. And eventually, the science caught up to the ghost.
Which brings us to the massive 2026 breakthrough. In 2024, Attorney General Brenna Byrd launched Iowa's new dedicated cold case unit.
A huge turning point.
Yeah, and Josh Oakland was right there supporting it. This unit provided the exact catalyst the case needed, the comprehensive retesting of the original DNA evidence.
It is the moment every cold case investigator meticulously works toward.
And it led to the climax of this whole 15-year saga. On March 17, 2026, a grand jury indicted a 53-year-old woman named Kristen Elizabeth Ramsey of Woodward, Iowa, for first-degree murder.
Just a stunning development after so much silence.
I know anyone listening is asking the exact same question I asked. What takes 15 years? How does a case sit utterly dormant with 500 dead-end interviews and then suddenly result in the indictment of a 53-year-old woman living quietly in a small town?
It's the most important question, really, because it completely demystifies modern cold case work.
Right, it's not like TV.
Exactly. On television, a magical new witness comes forward with a guilty conscience. But in reality, solving a 15-year-old case is almost never about new human testimony.
It's about the forensics.
Yes. It is entirely about applying 2026 forensic technology to physical evidence that was bagged and tagged way back in 2011.
So the evidence was there all along, just sitting in a cardboard box.
Exactly. Remember how we called Unit 521 a sterile grave? In 2011, standard DNA testing required a relatively large biological sample.
Like a visible pool of blood or something.
Right. Or material from a violent struggle. Because the killer didn't bleed, the 2011 science declared the scene empty. But by 2026, the sensitivity of DNA testing had evolved at a staggering rate.
We're talking about touch DNA, advanced phenotyping, genealogical tracing.
Yeah, which sounds like science fiction until you realize how it works.
Break that down for us because it's fascinating.
Well, humans constantly shed microscopic epithelial cells. Today's touch DNA means that if a suspect merely rested their hand on a doorknob for a second, labs can extract a viable DNA profile from just a few dozen invisible cells.
Unbelievable. And then there's advanced phenotyping and genealogical tracing, which basically builds a map of the suspect from those few cells.
Right. Phenotyping lets scientists accurately predict physical traits, eye color, facial structure, and genealogical tracing takes that partial profile and runs it against public ancestry databases.
So they might not find the killer immediately, but they find, like, their second cousin.
Exactly. From there, they build massive family trees, working backward until they isolate the one person who matches the physical phenotype and the geographic location of the crime.
It's a completely different paradigm. In 2011, DNA testing was like trying to read a book from across the room. You needed the whole book.
Yeah, good analogy.
But by 2026, it's like finding a single microscopic torn letter A on the floor and being able to reconstruct the entire novel, the author, and the publisher from it.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. Dedicated cold case units exist specifically to bridge this gap between old mysteries and new science.
Auditing old evidence lockers.
Yes. The indictment of Kristen Ramsey isn't because a detective found a new clue in 2026. It's the result of new science finally being able to read a clue that had been screaming in the dark since 2011.
The killer did leave a trace. We just didn't have the scientific vocabulary to understand it yet.
Exactly right.
So taking a step back to look at the full picture of this deep dive, we started with this chilling, pristine crime scene. A model home that baffled detectives because of its sheer clinical efficiency.
And that terrifying lack of physical evidence.
Right. And we saw how the silence of that event shattered an industry safety illusion, leading to massive permanent changes in real estate protocols. Championed by pros like Pree in the Midnight Ledger, who recognized the inherent dangers in the architecture of their work.
And ultimately, we witness the profound triumph of modern forensics. It proves that a phantom killer can only hide in the shadows for so long before scientific advancement catches up.
It's such a powerful takeaway for you to remember. The passage of time doesn't erase evidence. Often the evidence is just waiting patiently for science to evolve enough to translate it.
The truth is almost always captured in the room. It just takes time and the right tools to hear what the room is trying to say.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive into the Midnight Ledger and the breaking news out of Iowa, I want to leave you with one final, deeply unsettling thought to mull over on your own.
It's a heavy one.
We've talked extensively about the science, the real estate industry, and the tragic loss of Ashley. But consider the psychology of the suspect.
Yeah, living that dual life.
Imagine what it does to a person's mind to live an ordinary, quiet life in a small town like Woodward, Iowa, for 15 solid years. Walking among everyday people, going to the grocery store, waving to neighbors. All while knowing, deep down, that they left a sterile grave behind in Unit 521.
It's really hard to fathom.
It is a stark, chilling reminder that sometimes the most profound mysteries aren't lurking in haunted houses or dark alleys. They are hiding in plain sight, just waiting for the ledger to be balanced.